This is Donald S. Reinhardt. I'm reading from my newly written book called The Encyclopedia of the Pivot System for All Brass Instruments. This is tape number 6. I will continue with the breathing discussion. Question 37. What is a good exercise for the reduction or the elimination of a neck puff? Generally speaking, a neck puff can be reduced or eliminated by using the following physical exercises, that is, no mouthpiece or instrument used. Number 1, compress your lips so that they are touching very lightly. Slowly push your compressed embouchure formation as far forward and away from your teeth as possible. Then bring your compressed embouchure formation back as far as possible into an exaggerated smiling position. Your neck muscles should retain excessive tension throughout the forward and backward motion. Execute a normal inhalation. Repeat this entire process about 10 times. Increase this total by adding 2 or more repeats every day or so. Number 2. Slowly open your mouth as far as possible and make certain that tension can be felt in your neck muscles. Bite down slowly and deliberately and retain the muscular tension in your neck throughout. Do not permit your teeth to clash together while closing them. Execute a normal inhalation. Repeat this entire process about 10 times. Increase the total by adding 2 or more repeats every day or so. Number 3, slowly push your jaw as far forward as you possibly can without straining. Retain this protruded jaw position with the prescribed neck tension for a few seconds, then rest for several moments. Execute a normal inhalation. Repeat this entire process about 10 times. Increase the total by adding 2 or more repeats every day or so. In many cases, I have seen the muscular exercises just presented reduce or completely eliminate a neck puff in several months. It is possible for every player to derive benefit from these exercises from time to time. Caution. Do not overdo these exercises. Question number 38. What is meant by the term breath focus, and how is it related to the actual blowing of the instrument? The term breath focus refers to the art of governing the size and direction of the air column as it passes over the tongue by altering the contour and level of the tongue arch. In this manner, the air column may be so directed that it strikes the back of the compressed embouchure formation so that the least resistance is encountered for the blowing. The entire air column starts from the base of the lungs, passes through the throat passage and over the tongue arch to strike the back of the compressed embouchure formation. This air column must narrow down gradually as it passes over its course. This may be thought of as a cone. The large end, the lungs, the small end, the compressed embouchure formation. The tongue arch is the sole governing factor of the last crucial phase of the cone before the air column strikes the armature. In order to perfect this gradual narrowing down process, concentrate on the following points. Number one, control the lungs by proper diaphragmatic and abdominal region manipulation. Number two, maintain an open throat, even if only by utilizing the correct head position. Number three, maintain the proper tongue arch level so that the center of the sound is retained. Assuming that the lung control is handled in the proper manner and the correct head position maintained, the improper use of the tongue arch level could upset this essential cone-like process completely. As the air passes over the tongue, it must be directed and the cone sufficiently narrowed so that the compressed armature formation will offer the least resistance for the blowing and the core of the sound maintained. Therefore, the level of the tongue arch, that is the breath focus, is a prime controlling factor for 1. Range, 2. Endurance, 3. Flexibility, 4. Intonation, 5. Tonal timbre, 6. Mouthpiece pressure, 7. Centering the sound. Hence, breath focus, though usually not even mentioned, let alone stressed, is a factor which frequently spells the difference between success and failure. Question number 39. In what part of your anatomy should the pressure be centered the moment before your attack is executed? If your attack is performed without the slightest hesitation, as it must be in all forms of correct brass playing, the pressure will be centered in the area of your diaphragm and abdominal regions. If the incorrect delayed attack is permitted to take place, however, then a tremendous pressure is experienced in your entire throat area. Test this by inhaling and speaking without the slightest delay, then by inhaling, delaying for a moment, and then speaking. And notice the pressure produced in your diaphragm and abdominal regions, and the freedom in your mouth and throat areas when your approach is not delayed. On the other hand, notice the pressure in your mouth and throat areas and the excessive tension throughout your entire playing anatomy when your speech is delayed. The principles applied for speaking are identical with those applied when playing. Consequently, the importance of mastering the attack without delay cannot be overemphasized. Question number 40. How does hitting the center of the tone depend on the method of blowing, on diaphragmatic tension, and so forth? Hitting the center of the tone would be very difficult or impossible if the proper diaphragmatic tension were not utilized. Any controlled exhalation, that is the blowing, without the proper diaphragmatic tension and lift is not possible. As far as hitting the center of the tone is concerned, the most vital factor is how the tongue directs and governs the size of the air column. Even this will fail, however, if the proper diaphragmatic tension is not employed. When you hit north, that is sharp, on a note, your tongue is striking too high in your mouth. If Furthermore, when you hit south, that is flat on a note, your tongue is striking too low in your mouth. Again, this cannot be controlled accurately if the proper diaphragmatic tension is not present. Remember, the level of the tongue arch and the level of the diaphragm and abdominal regions must be coordinated. Question 41. Why do some performers grunt a split second before their attack is executed? Grunting a split second before the attack is executed is often caused by any one, several, or all of the following playing evils. Number one, delaying the attack by bottling up the air. Number two, protruding the diaphragm and abdominal regions while blowing, especially for the production of the high register. Number three, improper head position, that is especially too far forward. Number four, improper breathing. Number five, a mouthpiece that is too small in proportion. Number six, incorrect tonguing habits. Number seven, permitting a neck puff. Number eight, an overly tense cheek area. Number nine, flabby mouth corners. Number 10, improper embouchure formation. Number 11, a floating or drifting mouthpiece position. Number 12, grunting on a tacit downbeat before playing the upbeat. Oddly enough, the player who is afflicted with the audible grunt during his attack is seldom aware of it until his friends bring the matter to his attention. In most cases, the principal cause of the grunt immediately preceding the attack is brought on by delaying the attack itself. If you are subject to this playing fault, you should make every effort to correct it immediately. Question 42. Why do some performers sing or hum while they're playing? Singing or humming is caused by the player's vocal cords vibrating involuntarily during the playing of his instrument. This extremely disconcerting playing ailment is often caused by any one, several, or all of the following playing factors. Number one, improper position for the tongue arch. Number two, improper head position. That is especially too far forward. Number three, delaying the attack by bottling up the air. Number four, improper breathing. Number five, improper embouchure formation. Number six, a floating or drifting mouthpiece position. Number seven, permitting a neck puff. Number eight, abnormal throat tension caused by protruding the diaphragm and abdominal regions during the blowing, especially for the high register. Much like the grunting habit, the player is seldom aware of the singing or humming evil until it is called to his attention by his fellow performers. The first three points mentioned are often the principal offenders and should be given your sincere consideration. Make every effort to eradicate this annoying playing fault. Question number 43. What is meant by the terms rapid or hasty inhalation? Rapid or hasty inhalation are terms which apply to any of the more rapid forms of inhalation used during the playing of a brass instrument. This category includes the sniff breath, the gasp breath, the quarter breath, the chest heave, and so forth. All forms mentioned may be used to augment, but never to replace, the standard mouth corner inhalation, and must be the backbone of all quick breathing patterns, even though it is much slower to execute. Many performers, because of the nature of their employment, are often forced into using the more rapid forms of inhalation for most of their playing. When this is the case, the performer must make every effort to practice the standard mouth corner inhalation during his daily practice periods. If this is not accomplished, then sooner or later, his entire breathing procedure will suffer the consequences. Question number 44. What is a sniff breath? A sniff breath is a rapid inhalation executed entirely through the player's nose. Although limited, it is often preferred by technicians because it can be used without disturbing the rhythmical figurations. Remember, the sniff breath may augment but should never replace the standard mouth corner inhalation. Question number 45. What is a gasp breath? A gasp breath is a rapid inhalation executed through the player's mouth corners. Actually, it is hardly more than a mouthful of air and is used by many players either as a means to an end, when they have misjudged the length of a phrase, or for the playing of short, choppy passages. Regardless of the reason for its use, of course, it should never supplant the standard mouth corner inhalation. Question number 46. What is meant by the terms quarter breath and chest heave? The terms quarter breath and chest heave are synonymous. These forms of the hasty inhalation are rapid mouth corner inhalations where the chest expands rapidly and the diaphragm and abdominal regions seem to be drawn inward and upward simultaneously. The quarter breath and the chest heave are used by many players whose employment demands the playing of many short, choppy phrases. Again, remember that no rapid inhalation should replace the standard mouth corner inhalation. Question number 47. If the amount of time consumed for the playing inhalation is the prime consideration, which forms of air intake mentioned thus far can be executed in the least amount of time, and so forth? The most rapid forms of inhalation are the sniff breath and the gasp breath. Either can be executed very rapidly, but the amount of air inhaled is extremely limited. The quarter breath and the chest heave are a little slower to execute than the aforementioned. However, much more air can be inhaled. The standard or normal mouth corner inhalation is considerably slower to execute than any of the hasty inhalations. it contributes playing advantages. However, and a tremendous amount of air can be inhaled if required. In my opinion, it is to the player's advantage to develop and maintain a more rapid technique for the execution of the standard mouth corner inhalation, rather than resort to any of the shallower forms of air intake. Form the habit of executing the standard or normal mouth corner inhalation whenever and wherever possible. Question number 48. Is it possible for some performers to sustain a note indefinitely on one breath? It is possible for some performers to sustain a note indefinitely on one breath. I have seen and heard this playing stunt performed many times. These players have mastered the ability to inhale and exhale simultaneously. The inhalation is accomplished by slowly seeping the air through the nose while the cheeks are utilized as air reservoirs for the blowing. Because of range and dynamic limitations, this stunt can be impressive, but is of little or no value for actual playing. Question number 49. Can a player adjust his tonal timbre in both brilliance and resonance merely by his method of blowing? Certainly, if more brilliance is demanded, the air column should be consciously directed so that it feels straight up and striking as far back into the mouth as possible. This physical and psychological approach to adjust the blowing alters the contour of the back part of the throat, the mouth, and the level of the tongue arch. If more resonance is demanded, the air column should be consciously guided to the fore part of the mouth, as if to strike the back of the upper teeth or upper gums. This physical and psychological approach to adjust the blowing also alters the contour of the throat, the mouth, and the level of the tongue arch. This will be found very helpful in pianissimo playing. There are very few exceptions to the instructions given above. Question number 50. Why does a high tone offer more blowing resistance than a low tone? A high tone offers more blowing resistance than a lower tone because, number one, the air column narrows down as it leaves the lungs to pass into the throat passage. Number two, the tongue arch is in a higher position and closer to the roof of the mouth, which requires greater air pressure to blow the air through the smaller space. Number three, greater lip compression, that is, pinching power, is essential to the production of the faster, tenser lip vibrations for the upper register. Number four, the air stream, as it leaves the embouchure formation, hits further back in the mouth, that is, more toward the rim. Number five, the acoustical design of the instrument itself demands more air pressure in the higher harmonics. The factors listed explain the rule that greater air pressure but less air quantity is demanded in the playing of the upper register. Question number 51. Do climatic conditions affect the blowing resistance of brass instruments. Climatic conditions do affect the blowing resistance of brass instruments. In general, the more humidity that is present in the air, the more easily the instrument responds. Players who travel a great deal comment on the excessive amount of effort which they must use while playing in dry climates, and conversely, the freedom of blowing which they encounter in damp climates. In addition, temperature directly affects intonation. The higher the temperature, the sharper the pitch. The lower the temperature, the lower the pitch. Question number 52. Does playing with a mute alter the blowing resistance, and is it detrimental to the playing of a brass instrument? Playing with a mute does alter the blowing resistance, and if carried out for an extended period of time, is very detrimental to the playing in general. However, I use certain types of muted exercises to alter the blowing resistance temporarily in certain correctional procedures. As a standard rule, use a mute only when called upon to do so. Question number 53. If the mouthpiece is placed more to one side of the mouth than the other, how does it affect the blowing? If the mouthpiece is placed more to one side of the mouth than the other, it has a definite effect on both the blowing and the response of the instrument. For maximum lip response, the direction of the blowing and the tonguing must line up with the off-center embouchure. Flexibility, attack, and sound are directly influenced by this all-important lineup. The blowing and the tonguing should be focused toward the end of the instrument. This is Donald S. Reinhardt. I am reading from my newly written book called The Encyclopedia of the Pivot System for All Brass Instruments. I have just concluded the breathing chapter. And now, chapter 4. Tongue and attack discussions. Number 1. What are the principal duties of the tongue in the pivot system? Old-fashioned instruction refers to the tongue as a valve. This, of course, is correct, but far too general, as it says nothing specific. The tongue is used in the pivot system has three principal duties. 1, the level of the tongue arch is one of the factors for the control of range. 2, the length of the tongue backstroke is one of the determining factors for volume and speed. And 3, the tongue level directs and governs the size of the cone-like air column, so that it may strike the back of the compressed embouchure formation to produce the lip vibrations for the particular tone to be played. Question number 2. When executing an attack, does the tone respond to the forward or the backward stroke of the tongue? in the pivot system, the backstroke of the tongue delivers all detached tongued attacks. Since no air can be released with the forward tongue stroke, no attack can be executed. The forward stroke of the tongue is merely the first stage of the attack. The tongue backstroke permits the release of the cone-like air column so that it may strike the back of the compressed embouchure formation. This makes it possible to direct and govern the size of the air column so that it may hit the back of the compressed embouchure formation at the point where the least resistance is presented for the blowing. Question number 3. Why are the same syllables used to indicate the correct tongue placement when referring to the various physical types of players? Since no two mouth cavities are identical, and no two performers will enunciate the syllables ta or da, that is for the lower register, to or do, that is for the middle register, and T or D, that is for the higher register, in the same manner or in the same position in their mouths. Therefore, individual differences are being given their usual careful consideration, even though identical syllables are used. Question number 4. How is the breath focus related to the level of the tongue arch? The level of the tongue arch is an integral part of breath focus. That is the cone-like air column from lungs to embouchure. Remember, it is the level of the tongue arch that governs the size and direction of the air column as it passes over the tongue so that it may strike the back of the compressed embouchure formation at this point where the least resistance is presented for the blowing. Therefore, the syllables or vowels are used to approximate the correct position of the level of the tongue arch. They are, number 1, ah, da, ta, for the lower register. Number 2, oo, do, to, for the middle register. Number 3, e, d, t, for the upper register. The student must give the factors mentioned his most diligent consideration. Question number 5. To what playing factors is the length of the tongue backstroke a prime contributor? The length of the tongue backstroke is a prime contributor towards the attack, the volume, and the speed. To a lesser degree, it is one of the controlling factors for the brilliance and the resonance in the sound. Remember, it is the backstroke of the tongue that delivers all detached tongued attacks. Question number 6. To what playing factors is the level of the tongue arch a prime contributor? The level of the tongue arch is one of the prime contributing factors for range, elasticity, flexibility, intonation, centering the sound, and so forth. Remember, the level of the tongue arch is the essential physical factor in the breath focus principle.
Question number 7.
What is meant by a badly balanced attack and tone, and what relationship do they have to the length of the tongue backstroke? A badly balanced attack and tone refers to the head or bead of the note being either too loud or too soft for the amount of tone that follows the attack. This evil is produced by the length and speed of the tongue backstroke being either too long and too rapid or too short and too slow for the amount of follow-through that is being blown by the air column itself. To produce a badly balanced attack and tone on a soft, sustained note, the tongue backstroke must be very short and slow. For the loud, sustained note, the tongue backstroke must be very long and rapid. By utilizing this principle, the air column is permitted to move forward unmolested by any impediment that a badly timed tongue backstroke invariably creates. This prevents the loud attack and tone from sounding too wah, that is, bulging the tone, and the softer forms from being too beady or pecky, that is, too much head on the note, in a sforzando or 40 piano. Too many brass players are in the habit of accepting an exaggerated head on the note for a so-called clean attack. Even while playing cantabile, that is, ballad or song style, the first note in every phrase is played 40 piano or thereabouts. The amount of attack used must be balanced with the amount of tone that follows, or the note is entirely out of proportion and certainly not in good musical taste. What is meant by the term tongue pressure, and how does it affect the player? The term tongue pressure refers to the tongue's pressing forward and making contact against the upper teeth, the upper gums, or higher, depending upon the register being played, a split second before the execution of the initial attack. This causes a bank of air to form in the forepart of the mouth, thereby creating the evil of the delayed attack. Sometimes the forward tongue pressure prior to the attack is so great that the player stutters or stammers out his initial attacks because he finds it impossible to release his tongue for the backstroke so that the air column can move forward. This playing fault occurs frequently with improperly schooled brass performers. To cure this form of playing difficulty, the student must keep in mind that no attack must ever be delayed and that it is the backstroke of the tongue that produces each and every detached attack. Many performers are much better off if they enunciate some form of the D or D attack for each initial note. This is particularly true if nervousness takes hold. A D, D attack plus nerves equals an attack from the T family, whereas a T attack plus nerves equals a tongue and throat that is so tense that a clean, crisp attack is impossible. Do not confuse this form of tongue pressure with the forward tongue pressure used for slurring and sustaining by the type 5 tongue group, which is explained later in this chapter.
Question number 9.
What is the proper position for the tongue while sustaining and slurring? The proper position for the tongue while sustaining and slurring varies to such an extent with each and every individual that the pivot system classifies them into 8 distinctly different tongue types. The purpose of this analytic procedure is to make certain that the tongue is offering maximum support to the air column and to prevent it from acting as an impediment to the blowing. This discussion does not include any of the rapid tongue forms, but rather deals strictly with the tongue position while sustaining and slurring. The 8 different tongue types are as follows. Tongue type 1. The tongue type 1 has been adopted by many of our present-day squeak artists in the dance field. While it does offer advantages to the performer who makes his livelihood almost exclusively in the upper register, I question its value for all-around brass playing because of the marked limitations in the lower register. This tongue strikes the back of the upper teeth, the upper gums, or higher, depending upon the range being played. The forepart of the tongue immediately snaps back into the mouth, and the remainder spreads to such an extent that it contracts and is supported by the sides, that is, the inner sides, of the upper teeth. The distance between the level of the tongue arch and the roof of the mouth is extremely limited. This thinning down of the air column to such a narrow point, plus the compression, that is the pinching power of the embouchure formation, makes it possible to produce the faster, tenser lip vibrations for the playing of the extreme high register of the instrument. However, if this high tongue arch is maintained, the low register will suffer accordingly. Because the size of the air column is entirely too limited as it passes over the tongue. Players in this category claim that if they permit the tongue arch to be lowered to accommodate the lower tones, they cannot bring the tongue back to its original position for the upper register unless they inhale and start again. I repeat, the tongue type 1 is not recommended or intended for all-around brass playing. Tongue type 2. The tongue type 2 is by far the most commonly used in that it permits a performer to articulate freely in all registers. However, with many players, it permits the jaw to recede to such a point that their playing suffers in other ways. Again, the tongue strikes the back of the upper teeth, the upper gums, or higher, depending upon the range being played. This tongue immediately snaps back into the mouth, where it arches and hovers in space. The higher the note played, the higher the level of the tongue arch. Although the tongue arch is altered according to the register being played, it continues to hover freely in the mouth, regardless of the range.
Tongue type 3. The tongue type 3 is one of the minority groups. It is used by many performers who possess long, thick lower lips with exceptionally short, stumpy lower teeth. This tongue also strikes the back of the upper teeth, the upper gums, or higher, depending upon the range being played. The tongue immediately snaps back and returns to make contact with the lower lip, where it resides throughout the blowing. The lower lip is so long and the lower teeth so short that the tongue contact with the lower lip does not interfere with the lip vibrations. Although ordinarily, it is definitely incorrect to allow the tongue to penetrate between the teeth, the long lower lip and the short lower teeth make it permissible
In this instance, because the tip of the tongue is actually being used to make up for the shortness of the lower teeth. Remember, this tongue contact against the lower lip occurs only while sustaining and slurring. Tongue type 4. The tongue type 4 is another one of the rarer groups. Much like the tongue type 3, this group is made up of players who possess long lower lips with exceptionally short lower teeth. This tongue strikes the back of the lower lip, snaps back into the mouth, and returns immediately to make contact against the lower lip. Again, the lower lip contact with the tongue is retained throughout the sustained and slurred passages. Other than the method of attack, the tongue type 4 is identical to the tongue type 3. The long lower lip and the short lower teeth permit the tongue tip to penetrate the teeth and make lower lip contact without disturbing the lip vibrations. Tongue types 3 and 4 certainly fall into the minority category. Tongue type 5. The tongue type 5 for sustaining and slurring is another widely used form. In this case, the tongue is utilized as a means of jaw support in addition to its usual duties. The tongue strikes the back of the upper teeth, the upper gums, or higher, depending upon the register being played. Then the tip of the tongue lunges downward to make contact in the gullet where the lower gums adjoin the floor of the mouth. While executing an ascending slurred interval, the tongue presses forward to create the essential tongue arch level and to support the jaw while protruding. While descending, the forward tongue pressure is gradually reduced and the position of the jaw recedes slightly. This is Donald S. Reinhardt. I'm reading from my newly written book, The Encyclopedia of the Pivot System for All Brass Instruments. I will continue on tape number 7, the next tape.